All right, what's good? It's about 5 p.m. here. This is Joaquin Flores coming at you live from beautiful Belgrade, Serbia. Again, about 5 p.m. here in the afternoon. Or early evening, if you will. And today we're going to be joined a little bit by Lucas Leitos from Brazil. It's a very big category. It's a very big place. It's like, well, he is from Brazil. You see, of course, he speaks often to international audiences, but, you know, in the context of Brazil, everyone's from there. But Brazil is a really significant player, as everybody knows, and we'll be honored to speak with him shortly, 4, 5, 6 minutes from now, to make sure he sees that he has ability to speak, and we'll start talking to him in about 5 minutes. And we wanted to do this in light of the last stage of the Brazilian election showdown between so many ways of framing it. It's very bizarre, but you have basically Bolsonaro and Lula. Both have had experience now as heading Brazil. And there's so much information out there. And it's not conflicting information. It's just like, well, how is this all working out? It's really, really weird. And we're going to talk about not just that, but also BRICS. What he thinks is going on with the Brazilian deep state, his commitment to BRICS, where and the where that places people like Lula, who of course are seen as being friendly to BRICS at some stage, and then you have this sort of World Economic Forum component. People have been curious about that, so we're gonna hear it pretty straight from a very well respected expert in geopolitical analysis. Writes for InfoBRICS, banned in the United States, by the way. If you didn't know that, InfoBRICS is banned. I mean, I think you can, depends on your, you know, service provider. You can often use a VPN. Access the site isn't that hard, but if you're an American and you write for InfoBRICS, you would be in violation of the U.S. Treasury Department, at least as interpreted by the Biden administration. You didn't have these notices going out until Biden. This is clearly about silencing ideas, because as, and this may surprise you, as we talk to Mr. Leitos in just a moment, he's not in any business. He's not in financial transactions. You would think that this is not within the purvey of sanctions, and you'd be wrong. This is an iron curtain that the collective West is draping around itself, and in cultural, academic, well, the cabal is rather entrenched in taken a number of defensive postures. Everybody locked down. So we'll see what happens. And we're going to be speaking with Lucas Leitos about that in just a minute. In fact, let's see if Lucas is able, and maybe we'll have to iron out a technical difficulty if there is one. Lucas, can you hear me? Yeah, he'll have to see that he has a special ability here to actually speak live at any time. Let me see if he can hear us. Yeah, this is a typical, we've experienced this a number of times. Also, you can't use, it won't work from the desktop app. If you are the caller in on a live stream, we've noticed it only works from the, you know, Android or whatever, smartphone. So keep that in mind. Okay.
Hawking, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Coming in now. Fantastic.
Oh, okay. I was in the computer.
Yes, that'll do it. That'll do it. But yeah, we're very glad to have you on. And, you know, we have, of course, many people are focused on kind of this big stuff happening yesterday in Russia, Ukraine, with the change of the military leadership and the, 200, 300 caliber missiles or whatever they fired. So that's on everyone's mind. But we know last week and coming up will be a next part of it, the Brazilian political crisis. Of course, this is very much connected to the crisis in Brazil, rather in Ukraine, because a lot of this is a contest between multiple visions of the future, a one world government versus different regions of the world having more like a sovereign, yeah, you would say like a sovereignty, basically, first of all, sovereignty and difference around the world. And so these are different visions of the world. And we see one version of the showdown in Russia, Ukraine, where Zelensky had told the world that Ukraine is the first country to be open as the, to be open for business or whatever, controlled by the shareholders of the, or stakeholders of the World Economic Forum. And that they're going to be the first cashless society. Yeah, they're going to be the first cashless society, the first governmentless society, the first stateless society, the first militaryless society. They're going to have no institution at all. They'll be completely virtual, I believe. But anyway, enough from me. Let's hear from Lucas. Tell us a little bit, first of all, about the people kind of want to know why we're listening. Tell us a little bit about your bona fides and your present area of research.
My connection on the cell phone is not so good. Your question is about the difference between the candidates on the Russia-Ukraine conflict.
Well, yes, we can talk about that too. Yes. In fact, why not? Tell us about the difference between the candidates, yes, on Russia-Ukraine.
Okay, so as everyone knows, when Bolsonaro came to power, he had a fracking policy based on automatic alignment to the U.S. But with the changes in the U.S. internal scenario, the Bolsonaro government had been forced to change this position, this stance. There were many changes, many rearrangements in the foreign ministry. So now the stance is more in accord to the Brazilian tradition in Franken polls, which is neutrality. And Bolsonaro has respected such a neutrality on the Russia-Ukrainian conflict. Bolsonaro did not take part in favor on either side. He had negotiated fertilizers with Russia and criticized Zelensky many times and so on. When we talk about Lula, we talk about a foreign policy by Brazil, which is vastly recognized as a sovereigntist, as a kind of moot pole foreign policy. He was one of the founders of the BRICS group, so on. But who's Lula now and who was Lula is a good question to talk about. Lula,
We want to know. Yes.
as well as Bolsonaro, he maintained a kind of neutrality, but such a neutrality criticizing Russia. He made it clear that he condemns the military operation. He calls it an invasion, and so. But he also criticized Zelensky. He did not take part in the Western narrative that Zelensky is a hero. So he criticized Zelensky, but criticized him by saying that he is as culprit as Putin. So he condemned both sides. This is a neutrality that shows proximity to the Western narrative. So that's strange for people who is outside Brazil, but currently Bolsonaro seems more pro-Russian, saying than Lula himself. Lula is not the same of the other terms. He's not the same of 20 years ago. He's not the same of the foundation of the BRICS group. He's another Lula, and I think that it's a gem for another question. So.
This is exactly what people are trying to figure out because, of course, people know about the corruption scandal and the coming of Dilma, and a lot of the personalities of the Workers' Party, Partido Trabajador, Trabajo, and they don't have a strong sense that, they think Lula coming back is gonna, push Brazil away from. They have some idea that Bolsonaro was on a neoliberal, Washington consensus position, not just on Russia, but on many things, on Latin American questions. So how, in regards to the development of Latin American economic regional integration, for example, when people talk about the different proxy currencies or virtual currencies that could be used to create like a single trading currency for all Latin American countries. Where is Brazil now in that? And does that look like, I mean, this is very much, of course, like up in the air, but walk us through, explain to us what that looks like.
Well, Lula, in his past terms, had a very important role in developing South American integration, the framework of Mercosur, and strengthening alliances with the older leftist governments that came to power in the same time. It had good, very good relations with Venezuela, and so. But this integration has been one of economic aspects only, not more than that. There was no kind of work to develop a political integration, a geopolitical common agenda between the governments. And so when the leftist governments left power, the integration has been dismantled. There was not a solid agenda able to overcome the change in the internal scenarios. So that's what's happening to South American integration projects when Lula and Dilma, the PT government, left power. And Bolsonaro came with another narrative. He came to power by saying that certain integration would be a kind of communist project to rebuild the Soviet Union in South America. And yes, and this speech was received with such a credibility by Brazilian elites, by the farmers, by the upper middle classes, and he came to power with this intention to defeat communism, so the Despublica intention. He recovered the old Cold War speech of the necessity to defeat communism, the communist threat. And yes, we can analyze the situation during the Lula terms and see that indeed there was a alliance between leftist governments, but these were liberal leftist governments, not communists. These were governments with no intention of making a revolution, of building proletarian states. So they were only liberal governments. Of course, we have Venezuela, the case of the Bolivarian states, but except by Venezuela, we don't have anything like that. So Bolsonaro came with this speech and he dismantled, absolutely dismantled, all the South American integration projects that have been worked so far. And Bolsonaro was not the only rightist government to come to power at this time. During the Bolsonaro government, we had a coup in Bolivia. We had the liberal right coming to power in Argentina, and Venezuela was the only to remain in power, just because Venezuela is indeed a socialist government, a socialist regime. So the South American integration is currently in in our continent, subcontinent, a kind of leftist agenda. The rightist parties do not adopt such an agenda because they don't think that it is important to integrate with neighboring countries. For them, the only thing that matters in economy is to advance privatization, the industrialization, and not to think about a solid economic platform in the continent. But the leftists view about continental integration is, as I said, only economic. There is not about politics, about geopolitical common agenda. There is nothing to.
Yeah, there's it's there's this is I mean I, and I would just let me if I could ask the question like this because I think this is fantastic. We're talking about Homo economicus, you know, the communist man as Homo economicus, and a lot of the integration, economic integration of the left wing government of you know those projects. We're also missing something, and you're a critic. I mean, you're not a communist. You're actually, you are. Are you like you are heavily involved in the Orthodox Church, as I understand? And you're a graduate of the seminary, or the yes, as well, right? And tell us a little bit about your background, so people understand, you know, what we're talking about on this show, because they might start thinking that we're, you know, talking about, you know, making communist revolutions in Latin America or something. We're just giving a correct analysis of what's going on. Yeah. So just tell us about your background a little bit more, so people understand, you know, this angle, because we're about to kind of shift into a discussion of logos and the Brazilian logos and Latin American logos and things like that. And so to set people to understand that, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background, like in the sphere of theology, et cetera.
Okay. Yes. Just a note. I was seeing the comments, and when people asked me if I think that Jake Sullivan visiting Brazil last month influenced the results. This is a topic we need to talk about, the possibility of fraud and in the elections. This is a very good topic. We will comment this later if you
yes for sure yes yes we're going to, yes.
Yes, yes. So let's go on the question.
Yes. So tell us, like, you're also religious, separate from your academic stuff, right?
Yes. Not talking about my personal views only, but Brazil economic views that are endorsed by their religious creeds. In Brazil, we have a very strange tradition in Catholic Church. We
yes.
have a very we are the largest Catholic country in the world, so we all know this. But there is a big difference between what is the Catholic doctrine and what is really, indeed, practiced by the people. Many people do not have access to the economic doctrine, economic thoughts of the Catholic Church. So many people adhered to this recent wave of anti-communism, anti-communist liberal. Radical liberal agenda, because they were very easily indoctrinated to do so. Bolsonaro knew how to use their religious sentiments against their own interests. This is the fact. But Catholic Church is not currently the center of this religious question, the religious issues. Since the second part of the last century, we had a very strange, vast phenomenon of advancing the Protestant. I don't know if Protestant is the best term, but Neo-Pentecostal sects in Brazil. This phenomenon has been strengthened precisely by the Lula government. This is curious, but Lula has he gave the diplomatic passport to one of Brazilian greatest Protestant leaders, Edmar Macedo, who is the head of the Universal Church. So the Brazilian sect gained so much power, not only in Brazil, but also abroad in Africa, even in Eastern Europe, we can find Brazilian Protestant sects. So they have too much power, too much money, and they became part of what we can call the Brazilian deep state. So
Yes.
this religious sect supported Bolsonaro when he adopted this anti-communist discourse. So the people's economic interests are highly connected to the Catholic social doctrine, the Catholic social thought. But people don't know this. People don't have access to this kind of academic speech by the church. And
Like
Bolsonaro,
Rerum Novarum.
Rerum Novarum, yes. So Bolsonaro and his supporters just spoke, oh, the communists when to come to power, the communists will do a revolution, they will take your properties from you, and people believed, both Catholic and Protestants. This is a false narrative to say that Bolsonaro is only supported by the Protestants. This isn't true. The Catholic people, not the greater Catholic organizations, but the Catholic people supported him too. So and many of these people during the Bolsonaro term have become disappointed with him because they saw that his economic views were not in accordance with their interest, the people's interest. So this is a note I'd like to do about how economy and religion in Brazil have a very important role. In my personal views, as you know, I'm an Orthodox Christian. I'm serving the Russian Church, and I take seriously the Russian Church social doctrine. We have a document specific about this social current social issues about economy, the environment, human rights, about all these questions that are discussed today. So we have a solid doctrine, but we are Orthodox in the Western world, and many people who are Orthodox in the Western world have become Orthodox precisely because they have studied, they have find the church through intellectual via. This is not something organic as the case of the native Christians in Brazil. I think the same phenomenon that we had in Brazil could happen in an Orthodox country any time if people could be deluded by good political speech. In Brazil, we had this with the Catholic and the Protestant religions. This is a sad situation because not only Bolsonaro did so, but also Lula is doing so now. Lula is trying to get the Protestant public, the Protestant. His current this week we had, for example, Lula supporters is spreading fake news about Bolsonaro speeches in Masonic temples, so linking Bolsonaro to the Freemasonry in order to to create a conspiracy theory about the Freemasonry check in Brazil from
Yeah,
the different torches.
it's some BlueAnon. They're doing some BlueAnon stuff. Yeah, they're taking BlueAnon technology, the strange phenomenon in the US of where Democrats try to get into conspiracy theories, and it's called BlueAnon, like the color blue.
We have this by the left party, by
Yes.
the petition supporters, and this is curious because historically the left party simply ignored the existence of religion. Religion is not part of the debate, the public debate. And now they are using the same narrative because they seem to have discovered that Brazilian people, as any other religious people in the world, cares more about religion, about the spiritual sentiments, than about economy, than about anything else. So the left party is using this narrative now, and we see how currently Brazilian politicians use religion as a weapon to gain votes, to delude people. Both Bolsonaro and Lula do so, and that is not good for anyone.
And so, I mean, when you look at the question of logos and
Logos, yes.
civilization, and
Yes.
whether, Latin America is, is there a logos of a Latin America? Because and just so that just to not for your benefit so much as the audience, this idea of logos is about in multipolarity, in cultural multipolarity. Of course, like one of the main problems in globalization is a process called deracination, in which in the maybe in stage number one of globalization, it's like a party where everyone from all over the world is like at the same party. You're like, wow, look at the guy with the turban. Like, oh wow, it's so beautiful. Wow, look at all this diversity. But then after, by the end of the party, everyone's basically indoctrinated into the patterns and the rhythms of the evolution of the party. And so then you end up with a global monoculture and things like this. And separate and aside from whether one might be hypothetically desirable or not, what we know is that attempts to build one so far have been disastrous, which leads to a lot of, questions, because the success of a global monoculture is not obvious anymore. They have a case to make. They haven't made why global monoculture is what we should all be after, right? In contrast to that, we know that there's different civilizations. There's like, the East Asian civilizations generally, there's Latin American civilization generally, there's European civilization generally, there's Indian civilization generally. I think like, right, there's indigenous peoples of North America, indigenous peoples of South America, indigenous peoples in the Maghreb and in the and throughout Libya and throughout the entire world, right? The entire world are indigenous people. The Europeans are the indigenous people of Europe, right? So, this idea of globalization erases indigenousness as well. Tell us about logos, civilization, and the sort of cultural civilizational end of multipolarity.
Perfect. Oh, so when we talk about Brazil, this is an important issue to consider too, because not on Brazil. I think that this is a global phenomenon. So, but both sides of politics, in Brazilian case, the right and left, usually refers to all the phenomena, to all the countries, to all the political scenarios. to justify the measures they went to implement here. So Bolsonaro usually talks about what Trump did in the US, and Lula currently talks about the European Union use there, and so we need to do the same in Brazil. We need to adhere to these agendas. We need to protect these values. We need to be like them. We need to be part of this global monoculture. This is the narrative that both sides use. They do not consider our culture as a different organism, a different part of apart from this global monolithic culture. So when we talk about this matter politics, the conscious discovering of our logos as a civilization is a very important issue, not only for Brazil, but for all the peoples of the world. All the peoples have their own circumstance, their own history, their own culture, religious issues involved, and so. And these aspects need to be considered first before seeing what happens in another part of the world, and try to implement the same in your region. So when we use the Dugin's literature, we see Brazil as part of what he calls
Attention, sir. That name cannot be mentioned. Woo, woo, woo. Attention, sir. That name cannot be mentioned.
When we do so, we have Brazil, South America, but specifically Brazil, as part of the solar logos, Apollo logos, Apollinean logos. So, and this is the mixing of the European logos which came from the Portuguese Catholic culture with the Yoruba religion, Yoruba tradition that came with slaves. And this was an African, very vast, strange empire in the Western Africa. And we have so many different cultures of indigenous people, so too many indigenous cultures that we can't now analyze each one of them. But in Brazil, we have so the mixing of all this forming what we can call the Brazilian logos, the Brazilian culture, that has aspects from Europe, from Africa, from indigenous people, and also from the many other peoples that came to Brazil in the world diasporas. We have the largest Arabic community in the world. We have the largest Japanese community, and so we have all this. So our circumstances are very complex to be understood. So just analyzing all the countries, all the situations. So a political party, a political candidate who is really, really supposed to find what's better for Brazil will try to study Brazil in itself. Brazilian previous elders, so important elders like Darcy Ribeiro, who prophesied the coming of the fourth Rome in Brazil. So we will study the Gilberto Freire, who is an alpha in the anthropology area, who made a very important work about the mixing aspects of European and African cultures. So we'll try to discover and expose Brazilian logos, and knowing this, to reveal Brazilian necessities and what we really need to become the power we are supposed to become. Because a country like Brazil, with its natural resources, with its territory, with its population, is supposed to be a world power. And if it is not a world power, it is because our government officials, our political and intellectual academic elites have not yet discovered Brazilian logos, as we are talking here. But we can use all the concepts, all the concepts, like the concept of culture. No one is able to say what is Brazilian culture. It's too complex. We have many cultures inside the Brazilian culture, macro culture. So, trying to mix these topics, I'd say that Brazil needs to discover itself. Brazilian politicians, Brazilian officials, Brazilian intellectuals need to discover Brazil. They don't know what our country is.
Tell us, what, from the perspective of where you are, what are the ways when you're looking at information warfare that populist forces in the US, post right, post left, MAGA, whatever you want to call it, new conservative, whatever you want to call it, populism in the US can interface with Brazil. And tell us about New Resistance, Nova Resistenza.
Yes. So, as you know, our organization is precisely the result of all I talked about in the previous questions about Brazilian logos. We are the result of the desire of some young intellectuals, young political activists, to know what we need to do to in order for Brazil to become what it is supposed to be, which is a world power. And we have ever considered the meta-political aspect, the not materialist aspect of politics that needs to be part of our views, of our analysis about the world. So, in 2015, we had some personal meetings in the Rio de Janeiro city, and decided to organize ourselves in a movement able to build a resistance, a new resistance. So, between and to build, not between, but beyond left and right. So this came with a very complicated world scenario: the conflict in Ukraine, in Donbas, and also many political mass protests in the Western world. And so we were seeing that there was a change going on, a change in world politics, in world geopolitics, and Brazil was not ready to find its potential among these events. And so we found ourselves able to propose a solution to this problem. And so we organized and created this movement. At the same time, all the movements with the same name were emerging in other countries. We have the Serbian New Resistance, the European New Resistance. Every organization is absolutely sovereign its decisions. That we are another kind of global conspiracy to raise a populist world government, not like that. So we are the result of the desire of people that are supposed to have the same or very similar desires for their countries. And so in Brazil, we had many difficulties along the years. So in 2016, we had radical political change in Brazil. Michel Temer came to power, and so 2 years later, the election of Bolsonaro, and now the possible return of Lula. We have passed all these events absolutely intact. We did not take part in either side. We did not support PT, we did not support Bolsonaro, and we will not support right or left parties when they are really working against Brazil, really working against Brazilian interests, against our country in every way possible, against our culture, against our economy, against our military, against our state. And new resistance, I prefer to use the Nova Resistência, the term in Portuguese, to emphasize our aspect as a Brazilian organization. So Nova Resistência is currently very organized, very strange organization. We have alliances with many people in many areas. So among the politicians, the military, and so on, we have a congressman elected who is part of the organization in a northeastern state. And so we are increasing our activities, our strength, our capacity of finding the best way for Brazil. And I can see similarities with many organizations around the world, not only the organization that use the same brand, Nova Resistência and New Resistance, but with that we have not by chance alliances with organizations in all Latin America countries. We are part of the Center for Liberation of America, who is a macro organization that unites Nova Resistência, Peruvian organizations, Colombian and Chilean and Argentinian organizations, Mexican organizations. So we are increasing in number and in quality. We have in the US movements that try to do what something I think is similar to our purpose. So you mentioned it, MAGA, for example. So I think that it is the maximum illiberal position that the American movements are able to reach. So this would be, I think, it would be impossible to raise any liberal or anti-liberal, better saying, anti-liberal movement in the U.S. such as Nova Resistance. I don't know. You as an American, know better than me. But that is my view. So the instance that is possible for illiberal Americans is something like nationalist populism such as MAGA for Trumpism. I don't know. I'm not American, but that is my opinion, seeing from Brazil. But Brazil is not like that. Brazil has another logos, as we said. Brazil has another history that is absolutely different. We have any liberal tradition that is very strong. The Brazilian laborism, which we work with the African of existence, the Brazilian laborism, which has nothing to do with the British laborism, Brazilian is another.
Right,
Is
right,
a
right.
is a is a very strong ideology. We have Getúlio Vargas participation in the Second World War and creation three biggest industrial state industrial companies in Latin America. We have all this based on any liberal ideology. We have a anti-liberalism in our political scenario as a very strong stance, as a possible stance. So, of course, currently all Brazilian political parties are using liberal ideology, liberal rhetoric, but this is not the end of Brazilian illiberal tradition. When I see the US, I see another circumstance. The US is a country that is built on liberal values. It is not like Brazil, which was an empire with a late modernity. So the US is not like that. So West is the most modern country in the world. So what?
Right. Well, it's like a
So
circular definition, you know. So it's a circular definition.
yes. And so, how can American youth revolt against all the world's problems, all the American politics, considering this history of liberal tradition? So I think the what they can do is something like this latest organization are trying to do. I see MAGA communists, right? Oh, today I wrote that I believe in MAGA Aloha now that Tulsi has left Tulsi left the Democratic Party today. So I
Yes.
believe in a MAGA Aloha. So
Yeah.
this is a stance that I think possible for Americans. I don't know if
Yeah,
you
yeah.
agree.
No, you have, I mean, it's difficult because the progressive and liberal intelligentsia out of the larger research institutes connected to labor and connected to journalism and connected to social studies in general have long been co-opted by these kind of George Soros philanthropic, you know, ultra-liberal New World Order, you know, globalization, globalist stuff. And so all of the resistance, like all just in the normal labor versus business, you know, all of the literature that labor relies on now to understand the world is created by academics whose chairs and departments and research lines are defined by the same multinational global cabal, you know, behind the ruin of the world. So it's fascinating how the left in the United States has been thoroughly destroyed and humiliated. It's fascinating how it's been completely infiltrated, dismantled, turned inside out. And I mean, it's a whole, you know, bizarre, long story. But because of this indoctrination through Washington Post and New York Times, whatever, this is not, I'm not saying anything. I have no right or opinion to anything. I'm just transmitting like what is floating out in the ether, what people talk about. By the way, for those just listening,
Yes. We have in Brazil,
yes.
obviously, the same situation with academic indoctrination. When we analyze who funds the most academic research in Brazil, we see it's millions of euros being spent to finance research about the far right in Brazil. And what is far right in Brazil? We don't have any far right movement.
Right,
Bolsonaro is
right.
not like a far right. So these indoctrinations are causing the mage in our country since a long time. Lula is a product of this indoctrination. Lula has been an academic project by the University of São Paulo. The University of São Paulo has the most powerful think tank about social sciences in Brazil and has imported many Western American European values to our social science. So the authors I mentioned in the other questions, such as Darcy Ribeiro and Gilberto Freire, all these authors are anathematized by the University of São Paulo because they talk about Brazil and using Brazilian perspective, Brazilian opinions. So, for example, this same university has created the concept of Brazilian racism, like it is in North America, in the US. So today, the academic speech is that in Brazil, we have a situation of a race civil war like situation as there is in the US, but we don't have this. Brazil is a mixed country. We have a tradition of white and black and indigenous people marrying each other. We don't have racism as it is in the West. So obviously there is racism in any country, but there is nothing similar to the West in Brazil. And this university created this concept. Brazil is the same situation of racism in São Paulo. And the new left parties adopted this speech. The PT government adopted this speech and implemented social policies to combat this kind of US-like racism in Brazil. That is not true, that does not exist. And the same situation with any other issues, many other issues. So when we see the academic professors, the professors who make this research, who had these researchers, they are obviously backed by George Soros foundations, by the open societies, and also the parties, the leftist parties, are backed by these foundations. And in my opinion, this is a kind of long-term hybrid war against Brazil, long-term project to make Brazil abandon its own perspectives, own efforts, own traditions. And we have the same situations in all the emerging powers and also the old having in the world powers. When we talk about information warfare, this is beyond the mere war of narratives, beyond the mere conflicts of news. We also have a kind of long-term hybrid war, when in where Ferengi foundations back research. Fund research and academic works that will change the people's mentality, change the mentality of the officials that you are creating public policies, and just in order to make it impossible for a country like Brazil or other emerging power to find its way to become a power. So, and this is a so I sum it up as a long-term hybrid war.
We have seen
Globally, yes.
globally, we've seen a general trend of equalization or catching up the developing so-called developing world, catching up very fast with the so-called first world. And with we're just within a number of years before simply looking at population number will tell you know, about the power of the country. And so countries like Brazil have grown economically at an exponentially higher rate than, well, obviously over the years, the percentages result in exponential growth by definition, but it has grown an exponential difference, an exponentially greater than the United States in its economic growth in the past 3 decades. And there's been different types of governments. There was a military dictatorship some several decades before that. But you've been explaining about the sort of Brazil's political traditions and influence by, in the older sense, in the older ways, even the historical left in Brazil. In some way would have been influenced by the church, the Catholic Church's social doctrines,
Yes.
because those predate the rise of the communists. The church's social doctrines, the Rerum Novarum, is from the 19th century. So these are in Brazil is when you understand the square mileage or square kilometerage of the country and the different the bandwidth of peoples within this zone, one could almost say that Brazil is a civilizational zone or a distinct civilizational sphere. I mean, in Latin America, distinct from distinct in some ways from Latino America in some ways. We had a, I think we had a either disconnect or whatever. But yes, we had been speaking with Lucas Leidos, if he's able to jump back on.
Hi,
Yeah.
I'm here. So,
Ah, no problem. Yes, well, we were just talking about like
I
the
was muted.
logos. That, ah, yes, it happens sometimes inadvertently. Well, we're just talking about the logos and that Brazil in itself almost like a unique civilization. It's justifiable by the square, by the size of the country and et cetera.
Yes, you mentioned the an important issue about economic growth that needs to be commented on. So, in the past 2 decades, we had a very important economic growth during the PT government, and this is ever claimed by the left side in Brazil as an example of the way the country needs to follow in order to become power. But this is untrue, absolutely untrue. Brazil had an economic growth during Lula term because we had the growth in the commodity exports. This all was only based on agriculture commodities, on soybeans and so on. And we had the same situation so far. So, not the disindustrialization has been increased by Bolsonaro, and all we have is agribusiness. This is a situation that we cannot make Petit corporate alone. We had the same politics before Lula came to power. I think the most precise moment to say that the initial point in Brazilian industrialization was the end of the military dictatorship. All issues we could comment here about the military. They had a very solid economic development politics. They had a very solid project for the country. And when the democratization of Brazil happened, one of the main point was to abandon every project initiated by the military, every the good projects, even the projects that were good for the country. So that is why I think that Brazilian New Republic is an absolutely failed project. This is an anti-product. This is aimed at destroying everything the military did, both the
Yes,
bad
I
and
see.
good things.
And go on.
So this is a topic I'd like to comment, just in order
Yes.
to make it clear that there is no exactly a difference between Bolsonaro or Lula or any other project, any other candidate can do now in Brazilian economic policy, because the new liberal agenda is part of this new Republic project. So all the presidents after the military dictatorship were new liberal ones, much more liberals than any of the military presidents. We all had an US interventionism in Brazil in order to make the military coup, in order to make the military come to power. But during the terms of the generals, we had a geopolitical instance of non-alignment, mainly with Ernesto Geisel, the government, who was the president who established good relations between Brazil and China,
Yes.
Yugoslavia. So this there were very bad and good aspects among the military government, as we have in any other government. So there are good and bad things, and we don't need to destroy everything they did. And this is the aim of this project of country we have since the 90s, to destroy everything the military did. We need to refuse to accept there were good things in the military dictatorship. But in Bolsonaro is a point of disintegration in this recent history of Brazil, because Bolsonaro came to power praising the military dictatorship. And today, many people ask how Bolsonaro got so big popular support. So why the people went Bolsonaro in power, having with his catastrophic policy? And this needs to be considered.
People
People,
don't understand why the working class votes for Bolsonaro a lot.
yes, And this needs to be considered. Bolsonaro is a point of he broke all the New Republic products. He came to power praising what the New Republic is supposed to hate. That word what was the military dictatorship. And he had with him many military among his staff. Not obvious, not active military, because active military cannot be responsible for government offices, but reservists. And people liked this. And now we can talk about the Brazilian imperial logos and all this. So when we see the surveys made by public institutes, we see that the two institutions Brazilian people loves the most are the Catholic Church and the Brazilian Army. This is not by chance. We had this in our history. This is in our blood. We are the heirs of an empire, of a Catholic empire, of a country that has never lost a war in its history. We have won all the wars we were involved in our history. People, when Brazil is a very big country in the most remote regions, the Brazilian army is the unique state institution that takes care for the people. When we have health care, the boxes for the votes, all of this is given to the people by the military. So people love the military. People love, as much as people love the church, its religious sentiments. So Bolsonaro gained power, gained the popular support, gained votes, using these aspects of the Brazilian people. The left parties are not able to do so because they are not willing to study how Brazil really works, how Brazilian people really thinks. The left parties prefer to think that Brazilian people are concerned about identitary agendas, about environmentalist concerns. This is not an issue for the people. The Brazilian people are much more concerned about precisely these issues that are used by Bolsonaro. And this explains how Bolsonaro gained so much power, using military and religious as weapons in elections, in campaigns. And this has not ended so far. Okay, Lula also has too much popular support. Okay, this is true. Many people are remember the social policies that Lula implemented. Many people remember the credit the people receive during Lula government. I mean credit, so not real power, not employment, but credit to buy something. And so buying power for the poor classes. Many citizens vote for Lula considering this, but also many people vote for Bolsonaro considering all these issues I mentioned it before. So none of the sides is able to understand that Brazilian people is simply rightist in its axiological, in its values, axiological stance, in its morality, and at the same time is is a socialist like in economy. So if Bolsonaro or Lula one day discover this aspect, they will become undefeatable in elections, because that is what Brazilian people want. There is an internet meme that sums it up very, very precisely, that Brazilian people vote for the Bolso Lula. But Brazilian people went to the military, went to the church, and went economic power. That's all. But both sides are uncompleted.
Yeah, no, it's a fascinating it's a fascinating subject. Folks, we've been speaking so far today with Lucas Leitos. For those just joining us, he's from Brazil. Of course, that's a ridiculously broad thing to say. We were talking about at the top of the first hour, in Brazil, everyone's from Brazil, so it's just that's not how you would introduce somebody. But to our little audience here, Lucas Leitos, a researcher from Brazil, also active in Brazil's well-known and actually subject of a lot of conspiracy theories and some funny negative press by usual suspects. Talking, of course, about Nova Resistenza in Brazil. Now, you have also talked to us a little bit about your Christianity, your Orthodoxy, your Orthodox Christianity. You've also talked a little bit about the logos of Brazil. We've talked just now about how funny it is. And you talked about that meme of people saying that the Brazilian voter really wants both. They want like kind of like an amalgam of Bolsonaro and Lula, and Bolsa Lula Lulanaro. So it's you have a it, the for many Americans who look at this question of military dictatorship in surrounding events in the US, there's some sense, there's some demographic of Americans actually considerably large. It seems to be about it was about 55 or 60% of probably voters altogether, I think. We're hoping that the military would intervene in the aftermath of the obvious to them, I have to say it this way, anomalies. And you're talking about a time in Brazil in a when the military took power during a period of a lot of broader plots and a complex geopolitics being played out upon Brazil. Without, I guess you're not endorsing the military dictatorship yourself. You're talking about the aspects of it that make sense of that people would support, very practical things, I think, that you were saying, that make sense
Yes.
to people.
Let
And yes, compare that to the
me answer.
American kind of thing with the with this thing with wanting the military to take power from the neoliberals or people like the idea in the US is that if we're going to be like railroaded into World War III or into permanent lockdown or something, that it's better that the military take over is the thinking.
Yes, let me explain, emphasize a topic about the military dictatorship before. So when the military came to power, the Brazilian president, João Goulart, was representative of what we called it as an illiberal Brazilian political tradition, Brazilian laborism. Laborism, as we call trabalhismo in Brazil, is a very strong political trend. The most popular government of all Brazilian, entire Brazilian history, was the Getúlio Vargas government. This was the real fear to the US government at that time. The real fear was not Brazil becoming a communist country. Oh, obviously, this fear existed, but not the main one. The main one was Brazil become a world power in the part of the continent that the US considers its backyard. So the military used US support to be able to come to power. So the military overthrew the democratic liberty government and used the anti-communist rhetoric. And during the entire military regime, the communists were persecuted and killed. And the Brazilian military made their part in the agreement. We will not allow Brazil to become a communist country. So this same military did not agree with the American idea of Brazil becoming a kind of colony. This was not in their minds. They invested heavily in industry, development, in infrastructure. This was in their intentions for Brazil to become a power, a world power. So they did the same that the president they overthrew would do if he would be overthrown. So this needs to be analyzed very cautiously. The relations between Brazil and the US at that time. It was a very complex relations, such as every relation between great powers at any time in history. So this was not a kind of automatic alignment, such as Bolsonaro did during the Trump term. This was not like that. It was a relation of a pragmatic proximity in which the military guaranteed the US that Brazil would not become communist, but at the same time, they did not agree with the US with the idea of Brazil not becoming a power. Brazil to become a world power was the central proposal of the military. And they tried to achieve this goal during all the military regime. There is a curious story about a Chinese diplomat that was in Brazil some years ago and was asked I don't know, I think that he was giving a lecture and a Brazilian official. Not official, sorry, a Brazilian student asked him during this speech how China was able to do everything China did during the last few decades. And his response was, "We simply did the same that Brazil was doing until 1985. That was precisely the year of the end of the military dictatorship." This was a curious response by this Chinese diplomat that I don't remember his name. All these good aspects were also ignored, such as the bad aspects. The bad aspects of the military dictatorship must be ignored, must be destroyed. The bad legacy must be destroyed, okay, but we can't ignore the good aspects. We can't hate our own history. We needed to consider all of our past and build a bright future consider your right and wrong positions in the past. That is a lesson the New Republic's politicians, sorry, in Brazil needed to learn. Taking this situation show the current scenario. So, the military support of Bolsonaro. this is a very curious question.
Yes.
Many people think the military supports Bolsonaro, but when this did not happen. This isn't true, simply. Oh, I am among the military. I studied at Brazilian Higher War School. That is the most powerful think tank of Brazilian military. I know them. I am among the colonels and generals. And all of them have a very pragmatic position on the Bolsonaro government. So, any position that is against Brazilian interests can't be agreed by the military. All the military I know will be against the privatization policy, will be against the idea of giving our space base as Bolsonaro did. He gave our space base to Trump. So, do you really think that military will support this? No. This is a position that is traditionally defended by the ideological branch of the Bolsonaro government. The ideological branch influenced by Brazilian philosopher. I think that this name I can mention. So.
Right.
Olavo de Carvalho. I think people know him. So he
Yes.
influenced the
We love
ideology.
we you know, some of us follow the memes, you know, it's but yes.
Yes. He influenced the ideological branch of the government. But the pragmatic branch, the military, this was not in their interest. So why so many Brazilian generals supported Bolsonaro? I will respond to this question by inviting you to see what Brazilian left talk about the military. Brazilian left parties simply hate the military. Simply think the military are a kind of fascist institution that needs to be destroyed. So how could the military, the high officials, support a return of the PT government? This was not in their interest, simply because the left hates them. So, in fact, there was a movement among some officials to support Bolsonaro as an alternative against the left, but this was not a support to Bolsonaro in person, but to his alternative to the left. And when Bolsonaro was against the interests of Brazil, the Brazilian military was against him. I don't know anyone he knows about that, but during the first months of the COVID-19 pandemic, the military had
Threatened him.
a sorry.
They threatened him.
Yes. The military were about to overthrow Bolsonaro. We're about to do it. Because I personally have many questions to do about the pandemic, but let's consider the official speech. When we talk about the pandemic, we are talking about an issue of national security. The health security is national security. And the military is supposed to care about this. And Bolsonaro simply did not to private Brazilian people to being getting vulnerable to the epidemic. He did not close the borders. So the military had a great friction with the government. And the same occurred in many other situations in which the government was against Brazilian interests. So I will do a small note. Obviously, I'm not considering all the positions of the reservist generals that are part of the government. I'm talking about real military, active military, active officials who are managing the armed forces. Former officials, that is current civilians, are not to be considered. They have their opinions. They have many times liberal positions, so on. But when we talk about the armed forces as institutions, there was never such a support for the government. But pragmatic cases of agreement and frictions, such as we had in the past with the PT government. True. If PT comes to power, the military won't do a military coup. This idea that it has been spread by the Soros Foundation's backed media outlets. Absolutely untrue. There is nothing like a plan to prevent Lula to return to power. The Brazilian military are not interventionist, and they will respect anyone who's in power. They won't, but obviously there will be agreement or frictions according to the situation. The left parties in Brazil created this narrative that. That the military supports Bolsonaro absolutely, that he could do a military coup anytime he wants. So, in the last few years, we had many moments the left parties predicted that there would be a military coup, and such
Yeah, we
military coup
sometimes
did
talk
not happen.
about people don't really fully understand the full scope of the when I talk about like the kind of Max Blumenthal wing of the Democrat Party imperialist information warfare. They don't really understand what I'm talking about. They don't understand how they're able to manipulate through the lens of Eurocommunism, specifically Eurocommunism, like anti-Soviet, but still like, red flag communism, of the anti-Soviet type. It's very bizarre. People, if it's a different subject altogether, but without digressing, we can say that you have this strategy of the US, on Latin America, and it's different, of course, for El Salvador, which is sort of like a very tiny country that was once
For
part
the
of
US, it is
Mexico.
interesting. For the US, it is interesting to
Yes.
form polarization between civil society and the military in the countries they went to be on their backyard, such as Brazil.
As
And
the if the US starts as it begins to withdraw its focus from Eurasia, starts to focus more on areas of immediate
Direction, yes.
force projection where it can have some supply line military. So you're looking, of course, at Latin America and West Africa as a zone of U.S. hegemonic power in the aftermath of the collapse of the transatlantic efforts, and so. That places the question of Brazil again in a very big focus because it would make more sense for American elites to try to integrate with powerhouses like Brazil and Mexico because Brazil is not the same thing as Peru and Mexico is not the same thing as Guatemala. In terms of population, natural resources, military, intelligence services, all these things. As you can see in northern Mexico, where the US deep state has been fomenting a failed state on the US border, and they've been fomenting failed state conditions. You have, of course, the nominally, well, the Morena government, AMLO,
Yes.
pledged, to basically eliminate this no-go zone and to restore order by empowering a new military faction. And Morena meant, the acronym meant, actually reference to like restoring the greatness of the past. And whenever you talk about restoring the greatness of the past through radical measures, you're actually talking something like a revolutionary conservatism. And it's interesting because he came out of the PDR and the left, the historic left of Mexico, and actually came out like more patriotic and more nationalistic in the patriotic sense, not in the racial sense, if there's such a thing. On the question of Mexico, the U.S. no doubt knows that, talking about the deep state in the U.S., they know that in Latin American countries, in the big powerful ones, that if the that the military is in any kind of condition of a depletion of social control or any kind of breakdown of order, right, that the military is the takes the place of the thin blue line, and the military becomes the thin green line between order and disorder. And while the conditions of oppression, exploitation that are persistent at any given time can also legitimately push populations in a direction of preferring, disorder over the order of slavery. Now, the problem with these color revolutionaries is that these are tactics that are meant to hyperventilate the population far beyond the direction that the problems would require in terms of the grievances being resolved. And yet, in countries like Brazil, there's been a discourse that the, of course, Washington consensus was simultaneously anti-communist, but they're the approach of the State Department towards Brazil, as we've been hearing, has been to also try to disempower the military so that only a neoliberal and foreign agenda can control, maybe regionalize or break Brazil up into competing different mini states. I'm sure there's many different you would know more about. Maybe you can fill us in on some of the plans the US has done in the years to kind of like break up or so beyond the creation of the new republic.
So I'd like to emphasize another truck that
Yes, no, yeah. However
yeah.
you like. These are just all kind of like suggestions and questions to, come back
Yes,
to, meditate
okay.
on. Yes.
Yes. So another topic that I mentioned it many times during the interview, the issue of Brazil's illiberal political tradition. I mentioned it, slaveries and so, but I'd like to emphasize that this tradition has always been involved with the military. Getúlio Vargas was a military officer. He made a military coup to come to power and establish the laborist government. So the military have already been divided between many trains that are military, more to the right and more to the left. But there is a common understanding in searching what's best for Brazil. That's small noted like to do in order for the people not to think that Brazilian they made that dictatorship was a simple episode of military trying to privatize a liberal government. So this was a pragmatic, as I said, a pragmatic proximity situation between our military and the US. When we see the Brazilian military efforts at the time, we see the same situation. They defended good relations with the US because we share the same continent. We don't need to be enemies. But you mentioned it, Brazil is not any other South American country. Mexico is the same situation, it's not Guatemala. We are regional powers, we need to be respected. But US foreign policies has a main aspect the searching for as much exploitation as possible. They are not interested in making French countries in having friendly relations with all the regional powers in the same continent. They are interested in making us slaves. At the same, as when well, it was possible to establish pragmatic relations, it was the instance of our military. But when the military saw the sorry the US saw that it was not interesting anymore to maintain a government concerned about development, they did the redemocratization of Brazil. So the New Republic is a project of the US too. This is not a Brazilian project. Such as the military dictatorship was a US backed coup, yes, and the democratization was too. So they prevented communism and liberalism to come to power, but they saw that we had a government concerned about development, and so they began to call us a dictatorship, and dictatorship must be destroyed, and democracies must be established anywhere in the world. And so we have a democracy now, a new liberal US-backed democracy. That is what we have.
But at
Yes.
least now you're free.
Sorry?
Now you have, but now you have freedom.
Yes, now we have freedom. Now we can have same-sex marriage. So this is the most important thing we need. So this is the leftist party mentality. We have individual freedom. So individualism is a concept that is a priority to the liberal to the liberals, and the leftists are supposed not to be liberals. But this reveals our situation in Brazil. The leftists and as well as the rightists are liberals. They prioritize individual freedoms besides anything else. So this was my note. We can go home.
I wanted to also get to the issue of Jack Taper. You want and because we had a question in the audience earlier about the Jack Taper. You know, this was a thing that happened, and I think we lost Lucas real quick. But if he's able to jump back on, we have about 10 or 15 minutes left on this show. This is a special broadcast about Brazil, kind of giving a background into the insight mentality, Brazilian people, how do people kind of view the history, the relationship with the left, anti-imperialism, the military dictatorship, what that meant, why people were have some nostalgia for that, or have some maybe critical support, counterposed to the US position, to which uses this kind of pro-democracy, human rights language to deprive Brazil of having a functioning military, or military as the bedrock of what guarantees the stability of civil society. And of course, you know, there's also criticisms to be leveled at that military dictatorship, or any military dictatorship. But when you're talking about a crisis situation and you're being subverted by foreign powers, even though threats of those, when they're false, can be used for demagogues or for tyrants to seize power on the you know, false, you know, lie that there's a foreign power, and that can be used to crush, and that threat of a foreign power can be used to crush dissident movements that have legitimacy in your own country. So this is a very multi-layered question, and a very intricate subject. But the way that it normally gets characterized is oversimplified, and totally lacking in nuance. But we had been listening to Lucas Ledos. I think we will basically wrap up the show. We had asked our questions, and we got some stuff. We didn't get to the Jack Taper part at all, and I know that he had wanted to, and I wanted to let him let us take us out with that. But due to some technical difficulties, it looks like that we will not do that. But yes, just so you guys know, I'll be getting this up, and the past couple episodes that I've not been able to. My son has had a surgery today, and I'm very happy to say that it went well. And it was just he had a hernia, inguinal hernia. He's only a few months old, and it's just been had terrible has had terrible colic, and I mean, so terrible. It's, I think, the worst anybody's seen. And actually caused him to, may have had some kind of pre disposition to it, but certainly caused him to herniate. It's just an awful thing. So I want to thank you all for your prayers earlier. And good luck, and God bless. This can go up on the drive. It's going to be titled about Brazil and Lucas Ledos. Well, I would
Hacking,
listen. Yes, fantastic.
no,
Yes, we have about 10
I
minutes.
just muted. I was just muted my microphone when you were talking.
Yes.
So, before, first of all, how's your son? He's okay
Yes.
now? Great. So, we have a specific question.
Yes. Well, we have the Jack Taper. We wanted to, you know, we had earlier the thing about Jack Taper, so.
Paper.
Yeah, there was or what was it? It was what was it? Jake Sullivan. Sorry, Jake Sullivan. Why did I say Jack Taper?
It's
Jake
really
Sullivan
fun.
in Brazil. Yeah, I don't fuck with Jack Taper. Jake Sullivan. What fuck am I talking about?
Okay, that's it. Yes, this was the question mentioned before. I'm interested, very interested in this topic, because the narrative that there is fraud in Brazilian elections is the main topic in current run. So, I'd like to mention that historically, the Brazilian left part are the parties that criticize the most our model of elections, electronic elections. But when The Bolsonaro government discovered that this was a hot topic to talk about, to use as a weapon to gain votes. The left parties suddenly changed their stance and started to support electronic votes above everything. So this explains what we need to take into account in order to analyze Brazilian elections. So this is not a Bolsonaro's narrative that we have fraud, that we have wrong proceedings, that we have technical problems and possibilities of fraud using these machines.
Yes.
This is a narrative by all the nationalists in Brazil, the left and right ones. And so, the Brazilian government, Brazilian state, we're saying, adopted the system of electronic voting in 1996. And this was an agenda of the redemocratization. When the military dictatorship ended, the Democrats, Brazilian Democrats, from the US, or the US ones too, but talking about the Brazilian ones, the Democrats tried to defend that we had to adopt an electronic system. And there was a process of discussing the project, and finally, 10 years after the end of the military dictatorship, the electronic system was adopted. So, but a curious fact no one talks about is the company that makes the accounts of the votes, the company that manages the machine. In the presidential vote, the Brazilian Electoral Court has an exclusivity contract deal with the American company Oracle. Oracle is the responsible to see who wins or not our presidential elections. And this is a serious matter to discuss. Since 1996, all of our presidents have been approved by Oracle. So, and Bolsonaro was approved by Oracle during a Trump government. He would be approved by Oracle during a Biden government. I don't know. I don't think that it is possible to make a fraud excluding the public opinion from the debate. We needed to take into account the public opinion. If Lula is so unpopular that people would not believe in his election, so I think that Oracle would elect Bolsonaro still preferring to elect Lula, but to elect Bolsonaro just in order to avoid mass protests and popular revolt. But if it is possible to elect Lula without making it to appear like a fraud, they will do. So I think that there is indeed fraud in our elections. Because since we have an American company controlling the numbers of our votes, so how can we ignore that U.S. has intervened in Brazilian politics so many times? So, okay, this is a private company, but this is a private company that has many reports of linking to the CIA and other intelligence services. So, it is, in my personal opinion, I think it is impossible to to ignore the possibility of we having fraud. So you mentioned the guy in the chat mentioned it, Jake Sullivan, and I'd like to mention many other people. I'd like to mention Victoria Nuland visiting Brazil recently and making offshore meetings with Brazilian opposition leaders and simply ignoring the government. So Victoria Nuland can hate Bolsonaro, but he's the president of Brazil. If she goes to Brazil, she needs to at least makes him know about it. But no, she met with opposition and made a statement saying that the US believes in America, in Brazilian electoral system. Oh, we don't want American opinion about that. This is our opinion we need to show. And I was recently a report that in late last year, the CIA warned Bolsonaro that he wouldn't be able to contest Brazilian electoral results because the American government would support the results in the machine, and he needs to accept that. So the CIA, Jake Sullivan, Victoria Nuland,
I mean, it's
what do
depressing
you
for a
mean?
lot of people. If I can just say, as you know, as we're getting into our last 5 minutes, that it's depressing for a lot of people that Lula has been compromised or sold out or bought off or he was always warped or something.
So we need to let number of US officials or European officials making it clear that they are supporting Lula. So why? And that is the most interesting issue. Why Lula has become the most loved side by Western powers. I think this is pretty clear that Western powers overthrew, no, not Lula, but the Petit government, overthrew Dilma, made a hybrid war tactic in Brazil in order to make Brazil for Dilma to resign, to be overthrown. And many people see the situation and say, oh, if the CIA overthrew the Petit government, the CIA would not support the Petit government to come back. So I think in the opposite way. In my opinion, the Western intelligence services, the Western government, the World Economic Forum, all the Western elites simply made a deal with Lula. You will come back, you will stabilize the market, you will stop Bolsonaro's project, you will project, there is no project, but Bolsonaro projects, you will make the Brazilian government to be more are friendly to our interests, so you can come back, and he accepted it. So that's my opinion. I know that the Lula of 20 years ago was a different one of the Lula we have now. The Lula previously was okay, a neoliberal, he was a leftist in the Democratic, US Democratic way, all of this. But he was at least a non-aligned politician when we talk about foreign policy and talk about multipolarity, when we talk about geopolitics, he was one of the founders of the BRICS group. He had good relations with Iran, with Nicaragua, with Venezuela, with Russia, and so on. But now, what matters the most for the global elites? Economic issues, or also solid foreign policy and support for the West. We are having a moment of big transition, great transition in world politics, great change. The world, in my opinion, is already a multipolar world, but we are having this transition. Russia is rising, China is rising, India is rising, Brazil can rise with them. Brazil can adhere to Russia, China projects to manage the economic situation, to surpass the sanctions and make a new economic project. All new economic platform, all of this are in our ability. And for the US, it is interested to avoid this at any cost. So if it is necessary to use Lula, who is a politician that the Brazilian people know as a good one, as the one who gives credit, who gives food, etc. So, okay, they will use this narrative to elect Lula and to manage the Lula government to attain all their interests. They can't do this with Bolsonaro because Bolsonaro's government is simply chaotic. There is not a security for the market in Bolsonaro government. Bolsonaro, okay, he supports privatization, he supports Brazil selling its state companies at low cost. All of this is real, but he has a conservative speech. He has a speech that does not make a deal with the speech of the European Union. He defends anti-environmentalist policies, and this is impossible at the current moment to establish an alliance with such a government. So they prefer Lula. I don't have any other opinion about the current situation than that. Currently, the Western powers prefer Lula. And in my opinion, this is very hardly to say. This is very complicated, complex, difficult to say such a thing. But I think that at this moment, Bolsonaro would be more pro-BRICS than Lula. This is strange, but this is the reality of our government. Bolsonaro has the support of the farmers of the Brazilian agribusiness. And Brazilian agribusiness depends on Russian fertilizers and depends on China, that is the destiny of the most of our soybeans and our meat. So, Brazilian agribusiness, this is the topic of my research, master thesis. Brazilian agribusiness geopolitically depends on multipolarity, depends on BRICS, depends on Russian China. And Bolsonaro is the one that supports agribusiness, that is against the environmentalist agenda, when Lula supports economic freedom agenda, Lula supports we eating cockroaches and so on. This is the reality
I
now.
mean, in my opinion, the crops that are growing in Brazil are causing global warming, and global warming causes starvation. So we should burn the crops to prevent starvation.
Yes, this is a speech. Yes. And by using this narrative, we can do many things. We can private China to get all the food it has for its ports. China is the world's biggest pork meat producer, and China uses our Brazilian soybeans to produce food for the pork. And without our soybeans, the US harms Chinese agribusiness too. This is a very complex situation. And more than that, when we talk about the Petit government fall, we talk about the Lava Jato operation. Lava Jato operation, I don't have any doubt about that, was an operation by the CIA in order for making to destabilize Brazilian current Brazilian internal political scenario and stop the few good things that were being made in the British government, such as the infrastructure industry. Brazilian infrastructure during the British government had a good market in partner countries, had a good market in the countries with Brazilian governments who had good relations in Africa, in South America, in Latin America. And this infrastructure industry was completely, absolutely destroyed. Currently, Brazil simply does not have any industry in matter of infrastructure, both in external, in foreign issues, and internal scenario too. In Brazil, infrastructure is very damaged since the Lava Jato operation, because the infrastructure industry was analyzed, had good relations with the Petit government. And now, with Bolsonaro, we have the same situation with every business. So I think that with Lula, the first thing that Brazilian government, in accordance with foreign intelligence services, will do is a kind of Lava Jato operation against the agribusiness. There will be revealed, suddenly revealed, many corrupt schemes between farmers and politicians. There will be suddenly revealed many crimes committed by the farmers, and there will be a necessary strong enough to destroy our agriculture industry. Brazil currently don't have an agriculture industry system, but it's basically export of commodities. But so that is currently the most important part of our economy, because we don't have industry, so what remains is agriculture, and they will damage agriculture too. I don't have any doubt about that. With Lula, we will have a Lava Jato operation against agribusiness.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've been speaking with Lucas Leidos, getting a sort of inside baseball on Brazil. The disheartening revelation that Lula has become compromised and become a, as Lucas has been explained to us, effectively an agent of the Western Sorosian Bill Gates World Economic Forum transatlantic cabal, and that for these reasons and some other ones that we've been talking about intermittently for the past couple of hours, that in many ways a Bolsonaro vote is more reasonable between the two choices. And of course he has his criticisms, very profound ones of Bolsonaro as well, but between those two, and all things being equal, he's saying this is actually very strange, what has happened with Lula, and he's made some deal with the devil or something like this. And and also we talked at length about the Brazilian logos South American or Latin American logos. Brazil as a regional hegemon, when the Brazilian military, in the tradition of Brazilian sovereignism through the military, through the its history with Portugal, its relationship of independence, the independence movement, the relationship between maintaining Brazil as a sovereign entity and the military, and how, even though the historic left in Brazil at a time was aligned with national sovereigntist forces and the historical right in the age of American liberalism of the 20th century after World War II in particular, and the Cold War, were committed to sort of a neoliberal selling off Brazilian resources very cheaply for the purpose of American manufacturing and things like that. Basically, a raw materials economy, and yet it would be both academics and the development of social sciences, borrowing, of course, in part from structuralism and in sociology, structuralism, or rather conflict theory, as well as a functionalist theory, to assess that even though the United States has been a reliable partner in terms of these social questions relevant to the early 20th century, like the specter of Soviet influence and quote unquote communism, that nevertheless, with the US supporting Brazil in that they didn't want the military or Brazilian society as a you might say bourgeois republic to become possible to even not even to even challenge the US militarily in terms of who's going to rule North and South America, but to be powerful enough that the United States could not throw its weight around. And that sort of base of power could even extend as an umbrella to other parts of Latin America, not as lucky to be as large and as wealthy as Brazil. And I want to thank our guest who has been with us, Lucas Leitos, for joining us. A copy available soon. I'll send you, Lucas, a copy. I want to thank all of you for being with us again. And I'm glad that we had this very in-depth conversation. The political crisis in Brazil and the confusion around it just reminds me a lot of sort of like the US around 2016 when it was very confusing for people to understand that the Republican candidate was actually like the anti-war candidate and the anti, downsizing or outsourcing candidate. You would think both of those positions would be kind of anti-war and left labor positions, and yet we had those coming out of the Trump administration without the most success per se in terms of policy. But compared to, we never know how bad things would have been, but we know that the kind of mandate that people like Hillary Clinton would assume to have, the sort of arrogance that you see with Trudeau and folks of this stripe, who may win by a margin and then make a victory lap and talk as if, 9 out of 10 people voted for them, and here comes the great big next transformation. I think personally, Brazil, as folks know, when I disappear and get plastic surgery, I'm going to reappear in Brazil as a gym owner. Maybe I'll go blonde. I don't know, go blonde, and I'll be known as Rodrigo. At any rate, this has been Joaquin, not yet Rodrigo. Peace. I'm out.